The Wild Robot, chapters 57 to 63. Strange sounds were echoing from the far side of the pond. What started as a low murmur gradually swelled to a chorus of terrified voices. There was an eerie glow in that part of the forest, and a thick plume of smoke began rising up from the snowy treetops. Roz charged across the ice and found the second lodge completely engulfed by a raging fire. Frightened animals were running in every direction, fleeing for their lives through the deep snow.
"What happened?" shouted Roz as Broadfoot galloped wildly past.
"We put too many logs in the fire pit," he said without stopping. "The flames climbed up to the ceiling."
"My baby is still in there," cried a mother hare, pointing at the burning lodge. "Somebody help, please."
Roz didn't hesitate. She plowed through the snow and ducked into the lodge. Flames and smoke were everywhere. A tall stack of logs blazed in the fire pit, and in the far corner a tiny ball of fur was shaking with fear. Crouching low, the robot wound her way beneath the smoke and around the flames and gently scooped up the young hare.
"Do not worry," Roz yelled over the roar of the fire. "You are going to be okay."
She turned to leave, but the doorway had started to crumble. So she shielded the hare with her body and smashed right through the walls of the lodge. Sizzling pieces of wood went flying as the robot and the hare burst outside into the soft snow.
"Oh, darling, you're all right," cried the mother hare, pulling her daughter close. "Thank you for saving my baby, Roz."
Now that everyone was safely away, the robot turned her attention to putting out the fire. Her glowing eyes darted around as she computed a plan. Then, with all the strength in her legs, Roz launched herself high up into the snowy branches of the nearest pine tree. A moment later, the tree was shaking violently, and heaps of snow were sliding from its branches and pouring onto the flames like an avalanche. Steam hissed up through the smothering mound of snow. The flames quickly died, the snow quickly melted, and within minutes all that remained was the charred foundation of the lodge. Roz dropped down from the tree and waited as the frightened animals slowly returned. Then she said to them,
"Would you like another lodge?"
The animals looked at one another, unsure of what to do. Understandably, they were afraid of another fire breaking out, but they were far more afraid of the deadly cold. So they pulled together and worked with Roz and built a bigger, better lodge on top of the old one. It had a taller ceiling and a deeper fire pit. It was made with more rock and less wood, and it had a supply of water for emergencies. But the most important safety features of this rebuilt lodge were the lodgers themselves, who now had a whole new respect for fire. Chapter 58. Thanks to Roz's truth, life inside the nest was mostly harmonious. But when the animals went outside, it was business as usual. Sometimes a lodger wouldn't return. Sometimes a lodger would return in the belly of another lodger. As you can imagine, that made for some awkward moments. So when everyone was gathered around the fire, they tried to keep things pleasant by having conversations like these.
"I wonder what Brightbill's doing right now."
Chit Chat lay on her back and looked at the ceiling as she spoke.
"And where he is and who he's with and if he ever thinks about us back here on the island."
"I am sure he thinks about us," said Roz. "I think about him all the time."
"I like to imagine that the geese had a fun flight to the wintering grounds, and now Brightbill is floating on a lovely lake, eating yummy food and making wonderful new friends. But hopefully they're not too wonderful, because I'd like to stay his best friend if possible."
"That is a nice thought," said Roz. "But I worry that the flock might have gotten caught in this icy weather. I do not think they would handle it well."
"Don't worry, I'm sure they're fine," said Chit Chat. "Brightbill is such a great flyer that I just know he'll keep the flock out of trouble."
"He is a great flyer," said Roz, "but I still worry."
"Life is short." Dig Down, the old groundhog, was giving another one of her fireside speeches. "I'll be lucky if I see the spring. I don't want your pity. I've had a good run. But I'll tell you what, if I could do it all over again, I'd spend more time helping others. All I've ever done is dig tunnels. Some of them were real beauties, too, but they're all hidden underground, where they're no good to anyone but me. And they weren't even good to me this winter. Now the beavers, they have it all figured out. They built that beautiful dam, which created a lovely pond that made all our lives better. That must feel mighty good."
"The beavers made our lives better in another way," said Fink. "They taught Roz how to build."
"Ain't that the truth?" said Digdown. "Roz, you must have saved half the island with your lodges. And to think we used to call you a monster. I'll repay my debt to you if it's the last thing I do."
"Your friendship is payment enough," said Roz.
"Oh, please, your sweetness is going to make me sick. There must be something we can do."
"Your friendship really is enough. Friends help each other, and I will need all the help I can get. My mind is strong, but my body will not last forever. I want to survive as long as possible, and to do that, I will need the help of my friends."
The animals listened quietly to Roz and thought of their own struggles to survive. Life in the wilderness was hard for everyone. There was no escaping that fact. But the robot had made their lives a little easier, and if ever they could, the animals would return the favor.
"I have seen 93 winters, far more than any of you," Craig the turtle spoke slowly, but everyone always listened to his words. "And I can tell you that the winters have gotten colder, and the summers have gotten hotter, and the storms have gotten fiercer."
"I heard that the ocean has gotten higher," said Chit Chat, "but I don't see how that could be true. I mean, where would all that extra water come from?"
"You are right. The ocean is higher," said Craig. "My grandfather used to say that long ago, this island was not an island at all. It was a mountain surrounded by flatlands, and then the ground shook, and the oceans grew, and the land slowly flooded until the mountain became this island. Animals from far and wide were forced to come here to escape the flood waters. In those early days, there were too many animals living in too small a place. The island did not have enough food to feed them all, but between fighting and disease and famine, a balance was finally reached, and we have kept the balance ever since."
Chit Chat's eyes grew wide with concern.
"If the ocean keeps rising, the island will be swallowed up by the waves, and I don't even know how to swim."
"If the waves ever do swallow this island, it will not happen for a very long time," said Craig. "And by then we will all be long dead, even me."
"Everything has a purpose." It was Swooper's turn to lecture the lodgers. "The sun is meant to give light. Plants are meant to grow. We owls are meant to hunt.
We mice are meant to hide. We raccoons are meant to scavenge.
Roz, what are you meant to do?"
"I do not believe I have a purpose."
"Ha! I respectively disagree. Clearly, you are meant to build."
"I think Roz is meant to grow gardens. Roz is definitely meant to care for Brightbill."
"Perhaps I am simply meant to help others."
Chapter 59. Dripping water, flowing water, splashing water. Winter's blanket of snow and ice was finally beginning to melt. White was fading away to expose the grays and browns that had been hidden beneath. Little green buds were appearing all over. Crowds of bright flowers were rising up from the dirt, and soon the island would be bursting with rich scents and colors. At long last, it was spring. The lodgers returned to their own homes. The hibernators emerged from their secret places. Roz roamed across the island and checked in with the beavers and the bears and all the friends she'd missed. Then the robot went home to work in her garden. After the bitterest winter anyone could recall, life was slowly returning to normal. However, it was a quiet spring. There were fewer insects buzzing, fewer birds singing, fewer rodents rustling. Many creatures had frozen to death over the winter, and as the last of the snow melted away, their corpses were slowly revealed. The wilderness really can be ugly sometimes, but from that ugliness came beauty. You see, those poor dead creatures returned to the earth. Their bodies nourished the soil, and they helped create the most dazzling spring bloom the island had ever known. Chapter 60.
"Help! Help! He's got my tail!"
Paddler was splashing and screaming in the pond. Mr. and Mrs. Beaver were nowhere to be seen, so Roz picked up a fallen tree branch and stomped into the shallows.
"Grab onto this," she said,
as she reached out with the branch. Paddler grabbed it with his big teeth, and the robot lifted him up out of the water. And there, hanging from the young beaver's tail, was Rockmouth, the grumpy old pike. In one quick movement, Roz pulled in the branch and gripped the fish with her two hands. Paddler flopped into the water where his parents suddenly appeared.
"What is wrong with you, Rockmouth?"
Mrs. Beaver dragged her son away. "You've always been a nuisance, but this time you've gone too far. Do us all a favor, Roz, and toss him to the vultures."
"I cannot do that," said the robot, "but I might be able to help."
Roz placed Rockmouth in a deep puddle near the pond where he couldn't swim away. Then she waited for the fish to explain himself. Fish aren't very talkative, especially grumpy fish like Rockmouth. But eventually he opened up to the robot, and before long she was waving for the beavers to join them.
"Rockmouth used to live in the river," said Roz, as the beaver shuffled over, "but you trapped him here when you built your dam. He has been angry about it ever since."
"That doesn't give him the right to attack my son," hollered Mr. Beaver.
"It most certainly does not," hollered Mrs. Beaver. "I'd be upset too," said Paddler softly. "I'd hate to be kept away from my home. Mr. Rockmouth, you should have said something sooner." The fish looked up from the puddle with a frustrated expression that meant, "I tried, but no one was listening." Well, the situation had to be remedied, and you can guess who rose to the occasion. Roz was determined to get Rockmouth back to his home. After she explored the nearby waterways, it became clear that she would have to carry the pike through the forest and across the great meadow to the nearest bend in the river.
"I need a large container," said Roz to the beavers, "something I can fill with water so Rockmouth can breathe while I carry him home. I could make it myself, but I thought you might like to help."
It couldn't have been easy to overcome her anger with Rockmouth, but after Mrs. Beaver had a chance to cool off, she finally came around. "I suppose we're partly to blame for this whole situation," she muttered. Then the beavers did the right thing, and together they carved out a wooden barrel for the fish. "Here you go." Mrs. Beaver rolled the barrel over to the puddle, where the robot and the fish were waiting. "This should work nicely. Rockmouth, I hope you're happy back in the river." Rockmouth just flicked his tail in a way that meant, "Will someone please take me home now?" Roz filled the barrel with water and a grumpy fish, and then they were off. She carried Rockmouth through the forest and across the meadow until she was standing on the riverbank.
"Welcome home," said the robot. Then she tipped the barrel, and the fish plunked into the river.
Rockmouth's face poked above the surface. He flashed a big, toothy grin, and then he quickly swam away. Chapter 61. The story of how Roz helped Rockmouth spread through the river and across the island, and it was soon followed by other robot stories. There were stories of Roz growing gardens in dry, barren places. There were stories of Roz nursing sick animals back to health. There were stories of Roz creating ropes and wheels and tools for helping her friends. But most of the new stories were about the robot's wildness. You see, Roz had noticed that the wilder she acted, the more the animals liked her. And so she barked with foxes and sang with birds and hissed with snakes. She romped with weasels. She sunbathed with lizards. She leaped with deer. That spring was a very wild time for our robot. Chapter 62. It was a quiet afternoon on the pond, but the quiet was gradually being overtaken by sounds not heard there for many months. The sounds grew louder and louder, and then a flock of geese appeared above the trees. Honk, honk, honk. Most flocks of geese move lazily through the sky and trail off in wobbly lines, but not this one. This flock was fast. It flew in a perfect V formation, and it was led by a small, graceful goose. The flock flew once around the pond before gliding down and gently splashing into the water. The geese gathered in a tight group in the middle of the pond. They floated there for a while, softly honking to one another, and then the leader broke away from the others. He swam straight toward the nest, waddled into the garden, and fluttered up to his mother's shoulder. "Welcome home, son," said Roz.
"It's good to be back, Ma," said Bright Bill.
Chapter 63. After months of separation, Roz and Bright Bill, mother and son, were together again, and they had so much catching up to do. They went into the nest, and the robot built a fire. Then the goose gazed into the flames and told the story of his winter. This is what he said.
"We spent the whole first day of our migration flying over the ocean. It seemed like the ocean would go on forever, but just when the flock was getting tired, Long Neck pointed to some tiny islands on the horizon. We flew down to one of the islands and ate dune grass and rested our wings. After a few days of hopping from island to island, we reached the mainland and continued over fields and forests. And then the snow began to fall. I'd never seen snow before, and at first I thought it was beautiful, but it just kept coming. The others explained that the snow was early, that we were never supposed to see it, but there it was, piling up all around us as we tried to sleep at night. Long Neck worried that the weakest geese wouldn't survive, and he was right. We lost old Widefoot to that very first snowstorm. We tried to fly around the snowy weather, but we got completely lost, and the weather became even worse. Lakes and ponds and rivers began freezing over. We couldn't find food or water, so we ate snow, and that only made us colder. We had trouble cleaning ourselves, and our feathers became dirty and heavy. The flock was in bad shape, but Long Neck kept us moving. "We are geese," he squawked, "and geese keep going." One day we were struggling through a snow shower when we saw something called a farm. It had perfectly square fields and enormous buildings, and stomping her way through the farm was a robot. She looked just like you, Ma. Long Neck sent me over to speak to the robot, but I couldn't understand anything she said. So I just followed her through the farm and around a corner, and then I saw something I never expected. Plants! Bright, colorful plants. I didn't understand how plants could live in such cold weather, but then I saw they were actually inside a building. I learned later that the building was called a greenhouse, and it had clear walls made of something called glass. The robot pressed a button on the wall, and a door slid open, and warm air came rushing out. I hadn't felt warmth in so long that I just had to follow her inside. Ma, it was like summer in here. There. The air was warm and sweet and sticky, and there were rows and rows of different plants. The robot didn't pay any attention to me, so I wandered around the greenhouse, nibbling on leaves and drinking from puddles. Then I heard a scratchy voice behind me. "If I were younger, I would have killed you by now." I spun around, and there was an old cat. She walked on stiff legs, and her fur was gray and clumpy. The cat's name was Snooks, and she didn't seem very nice. But then she saw the other geese out in the cold with their faces pressed against the glass, and she told me how to open the door. "You can rest here," said Snooks, as the flock hurried in. "But stay out of sight. The humans aren't as friendly as me." None of us knew what humans were, but we didn't care. We were just happy to be out of the cold. Loudwing was so happy she cried. The flock drank and ate and bathed and slept and stayed out of the way. Snooks showed us where to leave our droppings so they wouldn't be noticed. And for a few days, the greenhouse was our home. Once or twice a day, the robot would go outside and return with a box or a bag. But most of the time, she stayed inside and quietly worked on the plants. There was a barn that I just had to explore. It was filled with animals and machines and piles of straw and two robots. One robot was fixing a broken door when I walked in. She was using a loud spinning tool called a saw. She pushed the saw through a long piece of wood, and dust shot into the air. Everything was going smoothly until the saw suddenly lurched forward and sliced through three of the robot's fingers. But she was fine. A moment later, there was a thwoop sound as she popped on a new hand. Then she went right back to using the saw again. The other robot worked with the animals, chickens, sheep, pigs, and cows. They were all in cages. The chickens kept asking me how I'd gotten out of my cage. I was explaining I'd never had a cage when I heard panicked squawks coming from the greenhouse. I ran back and found that a human had discovered the flocks. We didn't know what he was saying, but he looked really angry. Long Neck tried to defend us. He got in front and spread his wings and honked, but the human wasn't afraid. He pulled out a shiny stick and pointed it right at Long Neck. Snooks hissed, "Look out, he's got a rifle!" Suddenly a bright beam of light shot out from the rifle, and Long Neck slumped to the floor. He was dead, Ma! The flock was so scared. We fluttered around and honked and knocked over plants, but the human kept moving towards us, pointing his rifle. So I pecked the button to open the door, and we ran outside into the cold and flew away from there as fast as we could. Without Long Neck, the flock needed a new leader. Everyone wanted me to lead. I didn't know what to do, so I started by repeating Long Neck's words. I squawked, "We are geese, and geese keep going." Then I took the point, and the flock spread out behind me. Well, the weather had us all turned around, and nobody knew which way to go, so I just led us straight south. We saw more robots and humans and buildings, but we didn't stop. We knew we were way off course once we saw the ocean again, but at least it was a little warmer by the water, so I decided to follow the coastline for a while. There were more buildings by the coast. Most of them were on land, but some were in the ocean. The ocean buildings were dirty and crumbling and leaning in different directions. There weren't any humans or robots in those buildings, only sea creatures. We saw ships on the water. We saw ships on the land. We even saw ships in the air. They buzzed through the sky like giant dragonflies. And then we reached a place called a city, where thousands of buildings and robots and humans and ships were all close together. When we stopped to rest on a rooftop, we met a friendly pigeon named Greybeak. She had grown up there, so she knew everything about the city. She flew us over towers and under bridges and kept us away from all the buzzing airships. And everywhere we went, there were robots. Some of the city robots were just like you, Ma, but others crawled on six legs or rolled on wheels or slid up and down the sides of buildings. Some robots were really small, and some were really big. They moved things and cleaned things and built things and did every kind of job you can think of. Greybeak brought us down to a ledge on the side of a building and told us to look through the windows. Inside was a family of humans, and they had a Roz robot. When we looked into other buildings, we saw other humans with other robots. Every human seemed to have a robot. I told Greybeak about you, Ma, and she wanted to show us one last place. We flew out to the edge of the city, to a really big building called a factory. Greybeak brought us to the roof windows, and we looked down into the factory and saw machines building sparkling heads and torsos and limbs. The factory was building robots. A machine held up a robot torso and put two legs under it, and they snapped into place. It put feet under the legs, and they snapped into place. It snapped arms into the shoulders and snapped hands into the arms. A head was snapped onto the top, and the robot was finished. Ma, the robot looked just like you. I think that factory is where you were built. I wanted to watch more robots being built, but it started snowing again, so we said goodbye to Greybeak and continued flying south. We saw fewer robots and humans and buildings and ships. The air became warmer, and the snow disappeared. We started seeing other flocks of geese in the sky, so we followed them to the middle of a wide grassy field where there was a lake and hundreds of other geese. We'd finally reached the wintering grounds. After all we'd been through together, our flock had become very close. We kept to ourselves, eating and resting and remembering the geese we'd lost. But after a few weeks, we began to mingle with the other flocks. We met geese from all over the world, and they told us about their homes and their migrations and their troubles with the winter weather. Every flock had lost geese on the way there. A few flocks didn't make it at all. Before we knew it, the early spring flowers were poking up, and it was time to fly home. We followed the usual migration route north. We flew over fields and forests and hills, but we didn't see any signs of humans or robots, and that was fine with us. Eventually, we reached the ocean, and then our island, and then our pond. And then I saw you.